We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, goes for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown.
For the touchdown by Moore.
And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. 1, 2, 3.
Keep pounding.
Welcome back to another episode of The Roar, brought to you by Blue Wire. I'm your host, Billy Marshall, and it's game week. And as always, we have a guest from the opposing viewpoint to provide some insights into this matchup. And from the Cleveland Browns, we have my good friend Jake Burns, who covers them, does a tremendous job on so many different outlets. OBR is one, not only just Film Breakdown, you can follow his podcast too. Jake, what's going on, man?
Billy, what's up, man? Thanks for having me. Ready to start talking some football that actually matters, man.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of people are anticipating this game because of the long-awaited possible revenge match for Hollywood Higgins.
Yeah, well, of course, this is the Hollywood Bowl, right? That's the guy that we care so much about. You know, I mean, I think we all know what this is tied to, but it is funny that entirety of Hollywood's career is tied to the quarterback that you now find in your home team there. So it'll be fun to see how impactful Hollywood is, not just for Baker in Cleveland, but for Baker in Carolina for sure.
Yeah, definitely. And Jake, I've obviously been following your work for quite a while. I started actually following you during that 2018 draft because Cleveland, I believe that was the second consecutive year, they had the number one overall pick. So they were looking at QBs pretty closely, and you were breaking down Mayfield's film at Oklahoma and the rest of that class, whether it was Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Darnold, Rosen, whoever. So let's just go back. I want to focus on Mayfield just quickly. What were your expectations for him when he first came to Cleveland, you know, as a prospect? And where do you think it kind of went wrong the past few years or so?
So it's, listen, how much time do we have, right? Because I've spent so long in the past 3 years looking at this. I'll try to condense it. So to me, Baker Mayfield can do a lot of things you want your starting quarterback to do. He can make, you know, all of the leadership things I think are there. The elements are there. Now, he's not going to be every single person's guy. I think that's been evident. But for the most part, people believe in him. When he meets them, he's engaging. He's funny. He has a way of leading that I think a lot of players are drawn to. And again, some guys that's going to rub the wrong way. Some guys, for the most part, I think do fine with it. So, you know, with Baker, though, from a person standpoint, I still think there are some immaturity things that plague him. So a good example of that recently is the silly nonsense with the T-shirts. It's just the perfect example that ties it to your fans. There's no reason to release T-shirts that poke fun at the Cleveland Browns or his time with Cleveland. And he doesn't take ownership of doing it, says it's somebody else's responsibility. He couldn't. You release them officially licensed and you could have said no to any of this. But to my general overarching point about Baker is there's just a lack of accountability on the football field, off the football field, that I think ruined his time in Cleveland. Now, it could all work out in Carolina. This is not to say that the past is indicative of the future, but I look at what went wrong in Cleveland, a lack of accountability. It started in 2018 when there were some questions about work ethic, and the work ethic stuff translated over the years. There have been behind the scenes rumblings about how hard he was really driven to study film, how much time he spent playing video games versus time prepping for opponents. A lot of that stuff bubbled up, and it came out in a way that not many people liked, right? There's this quote that was out there about wanting a leader or a grown-up in the quarterback room. And now it's an ironic statement given the type of player they brought in to replace him. But what they were talking about was not off the field necessarily in terms of how they lead their personal life, so to say. It's kind of a weird thing I'm saying here. But like Mayfield was not a leader at the quarterback position in terms of first in, first out, all of the things you need your quarterback to do, responsibility, saying the right thing at the right time. All of that stuff started to really grind on Cleveland's front office and coaching staff, and it led to that comment. So they really did feel like they, and it was not, you know, whether it was manifesting Deshaun Watson coming to Cleveland or not, they were looking to move on from him. There was really no path back for those two together. Now, Mayfield has done some encouraging things too. I'll give him credit. He actually finally went out and didn't do pseudo work with the quarterback coach. It seems like he invested real time, real sessions, seems to want to continue doing that too. I think that's going to be important for him continuing to refine his mechanics, because his mechanics can lead him awry. He's inconsistent with his base. He's inconsistent with his tempo, the uncoiling effect of a quarterback. And that can lead to mistakes in ball placement, mistakes in timing, mistakes in decisions because of the mechanic stuff. I think it all kind of plays intertwined. When he's right, I think he's a quarterback that you can win with. You can even see games where he rises above and is a huge reason why you win. He's got that on his resume. The problem for Baker is the inconsistency stuff springs up. He's one of the most streaky players I have ever seen in the NFL. He can put together 10 great games, but it's either pre or post of that is struggling significantly on the front or back end with just doing simple things, hitting that backside dig, hitting a crosser with ball placement that allows him to run after catch. Right? Mixing up tempos. What you'll realize about Baker is he is a fastball thrower. He's like a closer. He comes into the game with a 95 mile per hour fastball and oftentimes can't find anything that mixes speeds, tempo changes. He's either throwing two throws as much as he can get into the throw, or as he'll lob something up the sidelines because that's what the throw requires, but he can't do tempo throws in between second and third level stuff like that. He's not very good at, and that can, you know, that limits what you can do as an offense to move the change in a bunch of crazy ways. But again, he is fine. He is a league average quarterback with spikes below and spikes above. There have been too often the spikes below. And really what I can tell you is that if his leadership presence and everything was in a great direction, he would still be in Cleveland. But what happened here, they couldn't move forward with just the type of person he was, and with what he was given, it was just never going to work out between both sides. But to the greater point, if he does have some maturity stuff come to be, if he can take care of the football, can stay healthy, again, making good decisions to stay healthy, he can be fine. He can be a guy you can win with. He's not going to be a win above guy. And again, you're going to see this stuff sort of play itself out when you get into the, what I call the what makes a quarterback in the NFL. You could tell what tier a guy's in predictable pass situations, big money downs. Everybody knows you're throwing it. There's no play action element. There's no deception element. There's no screen. It's third and 13. We're down 7, 4 minutes left, whatever, both sides. How does he handle? He has never handled those well, largely because defenses can kind of manipulate his line of sight. Defenses can change pre to post. He's never been great at that. So that's just my analysis over a long period of time. I could go on and on about this and kind of pick more granular things. But again, when he's moving in the right direction, he understands what the offense wants. He will be a guy that can do well. I mean, he can handle things for you. Again, not going to be a guy that you go crazy and win. You're like, hey man, we got Baker Mayfield who won us that football game. You're not going to say that very often, and the statistics have shown that, but you can do a lot worse than guys that you can scheme up throws for and he can complete them, right? Like that's where it was. The problem was last year for the Browns, he was being schemed up throws and he couldn't complete them. Now, a large part of that is shoulder stuff and other things that were lingering there, but the Browns decided they wanted more from the talent at that position, and it led to the current spin cycle we're in right now for the next foreseeable future. But there's no doubt the player they brought in is a better football player. So that kind of is where The Cleveland is, but yeah, to the larger point, I do think Baker will be fine in Carolina if he can just do the simple things that they're going to ask of him to do and actually take advantage of a running back who can catch a football and be a difference maker in that phase. So I think there's plenty to be excited about based on having watched Sam Darnold and some of the others that have been playing before him.
Yeah, absolutely. And even a couple years ago, Teddy Bridgewater posted some pretty encouraging numbers, but just the offense as a whole was pretty limited given Bridgewater, you know, he doesn't really have the physical skill set to really stretch the field. But let's focus on the current iteration of the Cleveland Browns. I want to focus on offense because Jacoby Brissett is going to be the starting quarterback. I've always felt he's a fine, you know, backup type QB. You know, I know he started that 1 year for the Colts, and that was a very talented team, and they won 7 or 8 games that year. So he's, in my opinion, he's a fine backup quarterback. It just depends on what you're kind of expecting from him. You know, many local fans remember his time at NC State, where coming out, he was kind of like, he's a traditional like pocket passer in a sense, but he can run. I remember there was a game when he was a rookie, like Thursday night game, Belichick, like against Texans, and he ran the ball all over them doing like these crazy run concepts. I didn't even expect him to. But how do you see his fit in this offense? Because he's going to have the talent on the offensive line and at running back. I know among your fan base, there's a lot of questions among the wide receiving core, but just given what he has to work with, what do you expect from him?
Well, I think the offense is going to look pretty similar to what it was with Baker, and they're going to do what they did last year, which is, again, in my opinion, manifest a lot of open throws that if they were able to hit 50% of open throws that were missed, they would have turned the tide from 8-9 to probably a 10-7 and potentially in the playoffs. So I think they'll continue to do a lot of the wide zone power run scheme, West Coast stuff that they have traditionally done, get the football out of his hands quick in predictable pass situations. They'll use a bevy of screens. They'll use a variety of typical West Coast staples, Haas, Hank, slant flat combinations. They'll use some stuff that incorporates backside digs. Stefanski loves to do different ways of getting backside digs into concepts. So I think it'll look the same. They were probably suspension for Watson with 6 games. We're going to put together things, different things, RPO things, some pistol stuff, some different things, 2 backs in the backfield with Nick and Kareem. And they still might. It's just a little later in the season. It's a little harder to just sort of implement that stuff, although they will be coming off of a bye. They still might, but the offense will look pretty similar. They're just expecting Jacoby to make more of the open throws, take care of the football. I think that's one thing Jacoby's done well. You know, he started that season, first season with the Colts, he had that one game with the Patriots where I think Jimmy Garoppolo was hurt and he came in and played in that, the Deflategate situation. And then he had the first season he started with Indy was the Andrew Luck shoulder situation.
Yeah, that was Chuck Pagano's last year.
Yep, and then he got the next set of unforeseen starting situation happened when Luck retired out of the blue. So he's had a couple runs of like, oh, I need to play a substantial number of games. So this is at least familiar territory for him. It's not something he's not accustomed to, so that helps. He is limited. He's not a creator. He's not a guy that is going to throw tight windows. Traditionally, as a ball holder, he's a bigger guy, so he can elude some people inside the pocket, get rid of guys who are hanging around him. But he doesn't take a ton of risks. And when, you know, if your quarterback doesn't take enough risks, you're probably not going to hit some of those tight windows, and you're not going to create some of those third downs where it's third and tough. And, you know, I was talking about it with Mayfield, where you got to have a quarterback who can make a throw or make a read or make a deciphering of a defense that allows you to create yards. He's not going to do that. And he doesn't have the legs element either. So the Browns are not going to be a high powered offense with Brissett unless the run game is utterly dynamic. Now it could be, they have 4, I think, very capable running backs, including rookie running back Jerome Ford. If you throw him in with De'Ernest and Kareem and Nick, you have 4 really good backs. They could get super creative beyond what they've even been in the run game. They've been a wide zone team is what everyone thinks they are. They actually ran more gap schemes, power counter and pin pull stuff than I think anybody would expect when you look at their data. They actually ran more gap than anything last year. So they're going to be creative with how they get play action incorporated. They'll use a lot of run action stuff where they pull a backside guard, selling that power counter look, only to have him sort of set up and anchor the backside edge and create that run action that sucks up the second level. It's going to be screens, play action, and a creative run game approach is how they'll go about it. And they're going to try to win games ugly. Their defense is pretty good, in my opinion, should be pretty good. And as long as everybody stays healthy, and I know that's a caveat for everybody, but they're banking on their defensive talent being able to help them. And their goal is anywhere from 5 to 7 wins in the first 11 games. If they can get to 5, they have a fighting chance. That's the basement. 7 is like an unbelievably great outcome that would probably be driven by some teams that are really good dealing with some injury luck at the right time for Cleveland. But that's kind of the hope, is the first four are extremely manageable in this sense. And I'm sure that Carolina feels the same way about the Browns in week one, but like, that's how they're viewing it. And is the first four games they feel like they should win. And Brissett can be a part of that if he can take care of the football, lead them on drives that yield points instead of turnovers, or, you know, dead drives where Browns were a heavy fourth down and go team last year, and Mayfield just could not get out of his own way on those. So they just need him to be a better version of injured Baker Mayfield. Baker Mayfield healthy is a superior quarterback to Jacoby Brissett. There's no doubt about that, pretty much every facet of the game. But I think Jacoby's better than an injured version of Baker. So they're thinking, okay, can we get a little bit better quarterback play, tie in a lot of the elements we already do, be a dominant run team, and then grind out some games? And I think they feel like they have a decent plan there.
Yeah, I want to go back to one point you made earlier about, you know, the Browns running a lot more gap and pin and pull than you might expect. And I'm actually not surprised by that because of the presence of Bill Callahan. Mm-hmm. Many fans will remember Bill Callahan. He was the interim coach in 2019 of the then Redskins, now Commanders. He came down to Carolina. Dwayne Haskins was a quarterback, and Haskins was, you know, he had a rookie game. He looked fine in some aspects and not so much in the others. But what they did was they just controlled the line of scrimmage and especially attacked the edges, which in my opinion is a weak point in Carolina's defense. I think many people consider Brian Burns to be a very good edge rusher, but one of his weaknesses is setting the edge and holding at the point of attack. And I expect the Browns to really, you know, attack that part of Carolina's defense. This is a run defense that was not good last year. They were a pretty good pass defense. Obviously, many people remember their fantastic start to the year, but run defense was an issue, especially on the edges. I definitely expect Cleveland to really attack that area. And I just want to get your perspective on this run game a little more, because the offensive line, it's definitely been a huge transformation from, you know, a few years ago. Now you guys have arguably the two best guards in the league, at least at the tandem wise. But there are some question marks about center. I think there was an injury in the preseason. What do you expect the offensive line to look like, and kind of like, how do you feel like their presence will help control the line scrimmage in a run game?
Yeah, good question. You know, I would say across the board, if you go left to right, Jedrick Wills is in his third year. It's a wildly important third year for him, because, you know, as a guy who's taken 10th overall, there's a lot of future decisions made after your third year. He's very talented, very good footwork, hands that are nice, punch to reset. Like, I think he does a nice job in both phases as an agile player. His switch from right tackle throughout his entire NFL career to left tackle has been a bit of a journey. You know, just in the NFL playing left tackle, there were growing pains, but I see the baseline for a very good offensive tackle. Now, he got rolled up on in week one last year and had a gnarly high ankle sprain that he played with most of last year. So that impacted some of his performance. But the issue for me, biggest for him, is he doesn't have a mean streak and he doesn't always finish plays. Like, he'll be in the right position, but he'll turn his head around. He'll what we used to call helmet cam it at the wrong time, where he's trying to find the ball carrier for no reason instead of staying on top of and finishing somebody in some form or fashion. So that gets him in a little bit of trouble. Huge year for him. Talented, though. You'd mentioned the guards, Betonio and Teller, and that's a large reason why the Browns went gap and movement stuff all the time, because they just have these guards who are so dynamic in space and in pin and power down situations to move people, shield people, get their body where it needs to be. So those two are just really good. They paid them well because they're really good and they want to use them in dynamic ways. They don't want those to be static players, so they use them all the time. Run action and their run scheme stuff, they'll be moving them a lot. Center was JC Treader, who was also a very gifted mover, but they moved on from him because of the contract. They had plans to start Nick Harris, the center from Washington, who they took in the fifth round in 2020. And had looked really good. He had a great game, Green Bay. He started. Treader never really got hurt. I think Treader was out with a COVID game, the only game he missed his entire Browns career. And he was really strong against Kenny Clark. And Kenny Clark's one of the best interior players in the NFL, in my opinion. And he was impressive. But he uses a hop technique as a sort of undersized center, 6'1", 3'10", or so. He uses a hop technique. And that hop technique buckled his right knee in the first preseason game, second snap. And I believe he tore his ACL. I never saw confirmation of it, but that's what I believe. So he's out for the year. They signed Ethan Posich, who's from LSU, who was drafted in Seattle, played some years at guard. He moved to center. He's been okay. He's a marginal player. He's a good mover. That's why they liked him. So he can move and do some different things, but he's a step down both from a mental standpoint and from a athletic standpoint from Treader. So we'll see how they compensate. And I would have preferred Harris, who's a better athlete, a better anchoring pass blocker. So we'll see how Postage handles it and whether they move him around a lot. Teller, again, the other guard, fantastic, mean streak, an athlete, man, is very good, very gifted. They trust him a lot. And then right tackles is a bit of a mystery. We've got these status updates from Jack Conklin, who is, I think, one of the most gifted zone blocking tackles in the league, but had a really great 2020, but 2021 dealt with some early season injuries. Then he dislocated the elbow, came back 2.5 weeks after dislocating the elbow and tore his patella tendon. So he's been on a long recovery. I'm not sure if he's going to play or not. They're saying the right things, but it feels like they're going to be super cautious with him. So I don't know who will start at right tackle. They signed back Chris Hubbard, but he's been beat up. Two straight years he's gone on IR. He's not really functioning well right now. So they signed Joe Haig, this player out of Pittsburgh, who's a rotational tackle who can be a backup guy who they gave some decent guaranteed money to. So he's their depth guy. The only other guy could be is James Hudson, who's a second year, fourth round pick out of Cincinnati, who's fine, who did get thrust into action last year due to injuries to Conklin and Wills. So he's got some experience, but not anywhere near a refined product. So he'll have his hands full. So right tackle is the position to pay attention to me. Great coaching, pretty great scheme for the guys they have, but some fluctuation on that right tackle spot and it just in center makes you a little less confident than before, but they still get the most out of their guys because of, like you said, Callahan's ability to get that out of guys.
Yeah, for sure. And I think he's arguably the best offensive line coach in the league. So one of the concerns that I'm hearing a lot from your fan base is kind of the skill talent on the outside, whether it's wide receiver. You guys did pay Njoku big money. So he returns after you guys went out in free agency. I think it was Stefanski's first year and signed Hooper, and he had some struggles, I guess, and obviously he moved on. So what are you expecting now from the skill talent overall? Because it seems like this is an area that could probably stand to improve.
Yeah, the wide receiver stuff depends on Amari Cooper. If he can be the best version of himself, they'll probably be okay. But that's not a usual thing for him. He's kind of like a 12-game player these past few years, so I'm not totally sure. He is good still, but a borderline number one guy, probably best suited to be surrounded by more talent. But you go past him, you go to Donovan Peoples-Jones, sixth-round pick out of Michigan 2 years ago, a nice rookie season, a decent follow-up season where he led the receiving group in yards, but that wasn't much to speak of in a really broken passing system last year. More of an X, bigger, longer body type, vertical route tree guy. Should push for a decent number of yards this year, should try to get up above 750, but not immensely talented, but an athlete, a very good athlete who can go up and get the football and does a pretty good job of that, but not a great separator. So he's your second guy. Your slot, it's up in the air. Could be David Bell, rookie out of Purdue. They took late third round. Nice player. Not a great athlete, but a decent separator because I think he has a really good understanding of route nuance. Haven't seen enough of him to definitively say one way or the other how I feel about him, but he's a guy who will get a lot of run. Anthony Schwartz, burner, third round pick out of Auburn in the 20 draft, has just disappointed every step of the way, has not seen the speed that is supposed to be Olympic class speed, and a great runner. Manifest itself in football speed. He has not been able to separate like you would like, and he's come across this drop issue in the preseason and training camp where he's just not really reeling in the simplest of stuff. So it's not even vertical route tree tracking, which he's not a great tracker of the football on those deep throws. He's not been able to handle slants and drags and digs and sail routes. Like he's not doing well with any of that. He's certainly their fourth receiver. We'll see what that eventually looks like. And then, you know, you're kind of searching for what the next receiver talent's going to be that matters. There's really not a ton of positivity. There were some ideas that the Browns would be interested in maybe going to get a Denzel Mims or a Darius Slayton, but they didn't make any of those moves. So they're sort of sitting pat with their wide receiver. They have Michael Woods, who's a sixth round pick out of Oklahoma, who had moments in training camp, but was out with a hamstring for all of the preseason. So he remains a mystery. Those are your five receivers. And they have a Dimitri Felton, who's a late round draft pick out of UCLA, who is a hybrid. He played wide receiver and running back at UCLA, has been used kind of all over the place, but mostly at wide receiver, probably a slot body. They'll use him on some jet motion, some fly sweep motion stuff, get him involved there. He'll see the football field. He's going to be their punt return, kick return guy since Jakeem Grant tore his Achilles. So you'll see Demetric Felton on the field a lot. He's wearing a running back number, but he's a wide receiver essentially. But yeah, it comes down to your second most talented pass catchers, David Njoku, who you mentioned they paid. He should get a lot of opportunity slot, playing some X, moving around. He'll be out there a ton. He should get a lot of targets. Big year for him to prove he can handle an increased role. I think it's all there for him. We'll see if it works out, but they'll use him a ton. And then Harrison Bryan is a tight end they brought in from Florida Atlantic, where he was a I forget the name of the college. Mackey's not the name of the tight end award. I can't think of it off the top of my head, but he was the college football's best tight end for the awards stuff. And he's been fine. He can be lined up in the backfield as an offset guy. He can be a wing. They use him in the slot. He's not a great athlete. He's honestly like Austin Hooper, who was there previously. The Browns let go. Just not a great athlete, but understands soft spots and zones, and he's where he's supposed to be, and he's pretty sure-handed, and I would imagine he'll get some opportunities too. So underwhelming skill group, a group that they have to get better at in the future. But I think, again, the Browns thought that they were going to get a quarterback on the field sooner than what they have, and they thought he could elevate some of that stuff to go along with that dynamic running back group. You know, they'll incorporate Kareem Hunt and some pass game stuff and Nick too, but they're going to be creative. A lot of screens, a lot of misdirection, a lot of things that are meant to get guys in space because of what the concept dictates. So we'll just have to see it that way. But they don't have a bunch of mono, go out there and beat up your guys type of thing. So yeah, it's a concern. It is one of the things that if we look back and the Browns really struggle this year, it'll be a contributing factor to that for sure.
Yeah, that's fascinating insight on the offense. I want to switch to defense now, but before we get to like the individual units and some players, what do you make of this scheme under Joe Woods? Because he's kind of been around the block for a few years. Was Vance Joseph's defensive coordinator in Denver. Then he worked under Robert Saleh in San Francisco for a couple years. I don't believe that his system is as similar to what they run in San Francisco or the Jets. So, like, what kind of scheme are they kind of employing here in Cleveland?
At its base, it's a 4-3. I mean, they'll play base stuff. I can kind of go through it with you here. They're a high-volume zone team. So they like to play quarters. I think they led the NFL last year in two high quarters looks and early downs, just typical four-down quarters looks. They led the NFL in that. They don't love to play man. Now, they'll play quarters with what's called a poach check, and they'll have Denzel in the boundary be one-on-one, and they'll essentially be playing 3-over-2 or 3-over-3. And if you incorporate the linebackers, sometimes 4-to-5-over-3 to the opposite side of the field, just sort of funneling things. What they want to do is they're not a high blitz team. They're not a high man team. They want to funnel things to portions of the field and do their best to gang tackle and make 15 play drives. Like, that's their goal. And they think they can create negatives through turnovers, whether that's Jadeveon and Miles wrecking havoc, and creating chaos in the backfield that leads to DB turnovers. Like, their concept to me is pretty simple. We want a couple of really good pass rushers. Their defensive tackle group, Jordan Elliott, Taven Bryan, not great. They're kind of glossing over that position. And there's some data out there that it's not the worst decision in the world. We'll see what it looks like ultimately. But they want really strong pass rushers, and then they want an abundance of defensive backs so they can rotate in and out and play different positions and create chaos and coverage. So they simplify things as much as they can, try to eliminate a lack of miscommunication and let their athletes play. Think less, play more, right? That's their concept. So they, in the secondary, they have two young players who are very good. Denzel Ward, who they extended, gave a lot of money to. They think he's got levels to unlock, and he's already been very good. They think he's going to keep getting better. He's still young. So Denzel, they drafted Greg Newsome in last year's first round, who had a phenomenal rookie year. He's going to play some slot. He's going to play outside. He can do some different things. Greg's a fun player. He can tackle. I think they called him a scheme agnostic was the word that Andrew Berry used. He can do whatever. He can play man. He can play zone. He can play a variety of zones. He can play cloud. He can play flat. He can do it all. They like him. They like him inside a little bit. They like Greedy Williams playing outside for them. There's a second round pick back in the 19 draft. He can play outside for them. Had a nice bounce back year after he lost his second year to a degenerative shoulder issue. He'll play a ton. They have a UDFA out of Oklahoma State named AJ Green, ironically enough, AFC North name that terrorized them for the Bengals for so long. They have this corner who's a pretty good depth piece, inside outside player that they'll play a lot. I'd imagine he'll get some snaps. And they drafted Martin Emerson, a third round kid, long, lanky field corner, very good in zone stuff. I think he'll fit right in for them. Had a pick six in the preseason. They like him. Safety wise, they have three guys they want to play a lot. They kept a surprise name that they feel good about moving down into the box, but they got John Johnson, who was obviously successful out of Boston College at the Rams, doing a bunch of different things. He's more of their post safety. They have Grant Delpit out of LSU, who's now 2 years removed from an Achilles tear his rookie year. So he's their jack of all trades, slot, box, nickel, big nickel stuff. He'll be all over the place. They brought back Ronnie Harrison out of Alabama. They traded for him last year before the season started from the Jags. 2 years ago, they traded for him, brought him back this year on a cheap deal because he underperformed last year, but he can do a bunch of stuff. He does dime backer role for them. So they'll be a heavy nickel team. That's their base. They will play base defense with three backers to match personnel. They'll bring on Sione Takitaki onto the field and play him as the Sam backer, but you're going to get JOK, who is phenomenal. He's so good. I mean, like, just closing speed, understanding things, angles, linemen can't touch him. He is the perfect modern backer who I think is primed to take a massive leap into the top five at the position in the coming years. He's out there all the time. They'll rotate two players at Mike, Anthony Walker, who is a longtime Colts running mate, right beside. I think it's now what he changed his name. It's Shaq, right? I think it's Shaq Leonard is what he goes by now. I think, you know, Darius Leonard was one of the best backers in the league, who loved him, who like wrote a swan song to Walk when he left because he loved him so much and what he taught him. And they like his professionalism. They'll play him at Mike and Jacob Phillips, this kid out of LSU they drafted 3 years ago, who's had some injury luck issues last year, just a random joint practice with the Giants, hyperextended his left elbow and like tore a ligament in the elbow and couldn't play all year. But he's athletic and he ran beside Patrick Queen on that dominant LSU defense, so he'll get some run too. They've got a ton of bodies, man. They got a ton of bodies, ton of athletes. They think they're going to wreck some havoc by doing simple things, being creative in their blitz stuff. They'll do this overload stuff where they'll shift three guys, called a boss front. They'll shift three D linemen to one side, walk up, mug some linebackers in the A gap, B gap to that opposite side, and kind of leave Miles in a one-on-one situation. They'll move Miles around. They'll move Jadeveon around. They'll try to create havoc through simplicity. They're not going to risk themselves on islands. Although they could, they're really not going to put their guys on islands all too often. They want to use their overwhelming athleticism and come up and gang tackle people. And Baker will know. He'll know. I mean, the Browns are talking about some different things they're going to do. They're going to be creative, more different looks and money down situations, because they were not good last year in third downs. They were frustratingly among the league's worst in third downs last year. So they're trying to get better at that. But, they do need to throw some wrinkles at Mayfield, because he knows a lot of what they do. So we'll that'll be one of the main focuses for me, is how Joe Woods combats a guy who knows him pretty well week one. But yeah, it's a very talented defense on all three levels. If you're going to beat them, you know, you're going to, in my opinion, take advantage of some schemed up stuff where you know what they're going to do to 3-by-1 or 2-by-2 and take advantage of tendencies. You beat up on the interior players because they don't have a ton of depth there. You know, they've got guys who are unproven. I said Elliott and Taven Bryan. They drafted Perrion Winfrey, who's an inconsistent player out of Oklahoma in the fourth round. And then they'll play Tommy Togiai, who was a fourth round pick the year before out of Ohio State. Like, they're just not very good inside. So if you can find ways to manipulate inside sort of runs, whatever that is, ice, whether that's some tight zone stuff, and you can manipulate their inside and put yourself in good third down situations, third and shorts, you've got a good chance. But the Browns don't give up a ton of deep plays. They just do not get beat deep. That's their whole thing. Keep everything in front of them. So that's the focus.
For sure. And I'm glad you mentioned the interior of the defensive line. That seems to be an area that Carolina could possibly exploit with their run game, but it's going to be interesting just because Ben McAdoo has, you know, historically never been a guy that's pounded the rock as much as, you know, their head coach wants to. So watching that dynamic all year will be quite interesting. But if you were to like project one area that Carolina could potentially have success, would you say it's in the run game, kind of exposing the interior of your defensive line?
I mean, it has to be. I think if you can, like I said, whether that's split, tight, whatever, I'm not sure totally what Carolina does run game schematically. But to me, with McCaffrey in the backfield, probably in gun a lot, because you can utilize some of his different skill sets in various ways in the passing game, it's taking advantage of that stuff, right? Being able to get yourself in third. I think against the Browns, what you really want to stay out of is third and long, even though they weren't very good at it last year. I don't think that's a stat that is consistent year to year. I do think it's a bit capricious in nature. So I expect the Browns to be a much better money down team. They actually were on the wrong side of fumble luck last year. So even though their defense maybe didn't look as strong on paper, I think it had a chance to be really good last year, especially by the end of the year when everything started to click and they brought back everyone. So rare for the Browns. And I'm talking from the top down. They brought every coach back now for the third straight year. And most of the players that are in the system, they're really not bringing in anybody new. Like, they didn't go out and acquire Martin Emerson, but that's like it. Their defense is, and they've talked about it all offseason. Like, we're ready to zoom. Like, we know everything they want us to do. We have the communication down. We know where we're supposed to be. And like, all of that stuff is in a pretty good place for them. Now, offensively, they're moving around some pieces, but in terms of players, new players into the fold. But for the most part, like, they feel good about that stuff. So, yeah, in my opinion, with Mayfield being a lack of mobility guy, he's really not going to threaten them all too much in terms of stepping up and moving forward in the pocket. He could do some things if you sort of crash and lose contain, but he's not going to move a ton. So can they take advantage of quick throwing game? Can they take advantage of getting the ball out of Baker's hands quick? Because you really don't want him hanging on to it. Can he find passing lanes? If he can do those things, I think you got a chance. And again, you need to really be able to run the football inside the tackle box, get a body on JOK, get a body on Walk, and make those second and shorts that yield third and shorts, second and mediums to third and shorts. I think that's the place to do it because, you know, I think that Carolina has some nice talent at wide receiver, but the Browns match up secondary wise with anybody. I really think they do. I mean, they've built the secondary to handle Cincinnati. Like, that's been their thing. They've saw what was coming with Cincinnati and they've built their secondary around playing the Bengals. Ridiculous talent at wide receiver and quarterback. And that's smart, right? Smart in a sense. But it can also, you know, if you run in the wrong team at the wrong time with the propensity to be able to tack interior and put themselves in good third down situations and have a coordinator who could take advantage of some of your tendencies, it can come back to bite you a little bit. But I don't think the Browns defense is going to let them down all too often. And I think this is going to be a relatively low scoring game, in my opinion. So it's just whoever can take care of the rock and, you know, put together some sort of 17-14 or a 21-10 or something like that. I don't see either team putting up a ton of points, really.
No, I'm totally with you. I see it the same way. This is actually the third straight year that they've opened up with an AFC opponent at home. I don't know what to take from that, but I do find it interesting that this game, it's going to be interesting just simply from the fact that you guys aren't facing like a new head coach where you're going to have to prepare for like a new scheme and you have to kind of project based on, well, let's just say like the Giants, for example. You don't have to watch like Buffalo, their offense or Baltimore's defense, which you guys have a lot of experience in. This is essentially the same defense that you're going to be preparing for that they've run for the past couple of years. And the same thing with Carolina. You guys have consistency at both coaching positions. So, I think it's going to be a very interesting matchup. I do think it'll be close. I'm not ready to predict anything at this point. I think it'll be, like you said, 17-14, whoever can kind of come through at the end. I will say, though, I believe the special teams edge is going to be with the Browns. Carolina's reliable kicker that they found last year, Zane Gonzalez, I think he's out for the year. I know you guys drafted, was it Cade York from LSU?
Yeah, they did draft Cade from LSU, and he is immensely talented, man. He is immensely talented. I mean, I'm watching pregame where the guy's kicking 70 yarders and I'm talking nothing broken, just the three step. Like, he has a tremendously powerful leg. They are very high on him. He was an extremely good preseason and training camp performer. They think they've solved the kicker position to the best they can. And they're excited about what he can do in that phase for them this year. So it'll be interesting to see how aggressive the Browns are on fourth down this year compared to last year due to that player. And, you know, we never really know until the guy gets in regular season games that matter. But as far as like finally finding somebody talented, that they have found a very talented kicker in Cade York for sure.
Yeah. And it's kind of the AFC North, I guess, is a breeding ground for young, talented kickers now. But no, I think special teams is definitely going to come to, it's going to be very Carolina. They hired a new special teams coordinator. They look pretty good in the preseason, but again, how much do you really take from that? But the kicking game, it's going to be very huge. And I think that in a game like this where field position will matter. And you guys have a head coach that is not afraid to go for it. Carolina, Matt Rhule has been very inconsistent with regards to his fourth down decisions. His first year in the league, he went for it like quite a bit. It was quite striking to watch. Last year, he played it very conservatively. So I don't know which direction he's going to go, but I know that the Browns are going to be very aggressive in that regard. And then just with special teams as a whole, I think that you guys have the edge. And in a close game where margins are really tight, I think that's going to matter quite immensely. I don't know how in the return game they have Andre Roberts, who, you know, he's kind of carved out a nice career for himself as a kick returner, but there's so much more to just returning a kick than just running it back, unless you're like Devin Hester or Cordero Patterson. I mean, any like final like predictions on like what to expect in this game? I think you did a really good job breaking down what to look for on defense, but overall, like, is there something that you're paying attention to that this could be the difference in the matchup?
You know, I'm going to be completely honest with you, man. I can't wait for this game to be over because I've made the statement this week that, like, you know, two people divorce or split up as couples, but they've already paid for a vacation and they're like, we just have to go. And that's kind of what it is with the Browns and Mayfield. I'm just tired of talking about Baker Mayfield. I'm tired of hearing his quotes. I'm tired of everything surrounding the guy. And he might be great for you guys. That'd be awesome. I really am not pulling against him. I'm just tired of the thought process in 5 years of the guy and like the Browns and the drama. And it's annoying. They have to get together week one. So I'm just ready for it to be over. To be completely transparent, Billy, I don't think this moves anything for me one way or the other. Like, if Baker's bad and he plays bad and the Browns win, that doesn't mean he's going to be bad and not be in the NFL anymore. And if you like, this game has really no bearing on the future, and people are trying to make it to be more than it is. It's just a first game. Now the Browns would love to win this game because they're like they've only won one time in an opener since the return in 99. It's embarrassingly bad. Ongoing joke. They tied the Steelers in like 2019 or 18. And that's been like one of the best outcomes since they beat the Ravens in 2004. So the Browns have a long standing of week one ineptitude. So take that to your betting delight if you're leaning Panthers. But yeah, I mean, I'm watching how the Browns are able, my focal thing from a player film, all 22 angles, what do they do to manipulate Mayfield? What do they do to confuse them? Are they able to do that? And then just, is the offense able to stay ahead of the sticks, keep Jacoby out of downs that matter and sort of capitalize on open schematic opportunities. But I don't know enough about Jacoby as a quarterback to like be able to predict anything. And I just need to see some tape of things that matter with McAdoo and all of that for Mayfield to like know a bit more about tendencies and stuff like that. So week one is such a blank slate and you have an idea of what teams are as a baseline, but man, this week is all about just figuring out what they want to do and how they want to do it. And for the Browns, it's, can they confuse Mayfield? Can they create chaos in him mentally that causes turnovers, and can they take advantage of it? And on the flip side of that, if Mayfield's able to take care of the rock, put themselves in good situations, they can score some points because, you know, I think that there is plenty of talent on the outside with the Panthers that can cause some issues with the Browns. And you're obviously paying attention to what they're able to do running the football in the interior as well. So those are just baseline places for where my eyes will be. And I think it'll be ugly. It's going to be close. I'm just going to predict the Browns have a better place kicker and they win it like 17-16, something like that. But that's totally a pick 'em. It's a coin flip, and I'm trying to make sure my fan base lets me keep talking about the team. So I'm going to pick Cleveland.
Yeah, I totally get it, man. Don't worry. And I try to stay out of predictions for that very reason. And it's still kind of early in the week. You don't know where injuries are headed. But are there any like notable injuries that you can think of at this point in the week?
No, just the Conklin thing. I think that's the most important thing to pay attention to, whether he plays or not, because the drop off from Jack Conklin playing and not playing is pretty significant on the right side. So that'll be something to track for sure. But I think the Browns are relatively healthy across many other positions. They didn't play Miles or Jadeveon a single snap in the preseason. Grant Delpit got dinged up in the third game and Wyatt Teller both left early, but they were just very minimal. We just want to get them off the field preseason stuff. So should be pretty good on that front.
Awesome. Awesome. And once again, Jake, thank you so much for joining. I really appreciate your insight. You've been immensely transparent with everything, and I hope our listeners can pay attention to some of the things you said. But before you do sign off, is there anything you want to plug, where we can find you on Twitter or some of the platforms that you're working on?
Yeah. So social media, it's at Jake_Burns18. Very simple there. It's pretty much all Browns content. So if you're not into that, then stay away. But otherwise, I do some stuff. You know, the OBR Film Breakdown is a podcast on Blue Wire. I do a daily show, so that's available every day if you're into that sort of thing. Also a part of Blue Wire Network. And then I do live game watches, which are pretty fun. There's a site called Playback. So we do live game watch parties, and we do them for every primetime game and every Cleveland game. So if you are interested in that, meander over to my Twitter page and you can find a link and link your TV provider and hang out and troll Browns fans if you're into that sort of thing on Sunday, because we'll do a live show during that one.
No, I don't know if any trolling. Carolina has a lot to prove before they can kind of troll any fan bases at this point. But once again, that everyone, that's Jake Burns. Thank you so much for joining, and see you guys next time.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.